Hello, my friend. Welcome to Hope for Your Heart. This is Pastor Calvin Corbett. Hope you're doing great this week as we start a brand new week of broadcasting, and we are excited about the opportunity to give you a recap over what happened this past weekend. We had an incredible weekend at Hickory Ridge Community Church, and I had a dear friend of mine, Pastor Rodney Mills, also known as the Mailman, spoke at our men's breakfast this weekend, did an amazing job, and he is a mailman by trade, and we were kidding around with him at the end. I says, "You delivered the mail today." And I want to remind you that if you're interested in joining our men's ministry, every second Saturday morning of the month at 7 a.m., we gather together at Hickory Ridge Community Church, and we always have a guest speaker to come in, and we'll give you a delicious breakfast, a high cholesterol breakfast with bacon and eggs and sausage and biscuits and gravy and coffee and orange juice and all that for $2. Now, you can't beat that. We'd love to have you come and join us second Saturday of the month at 7 a.m. If you have more questions about that or questions about that, please call me at area code 757-421-7500. Well, on our Monday broadcast, as you know, I always like to recap the message from Sunday that we had at Hickory Ridge Community Church. And I began with a dad joke. And I want you to know that before I give this dad joke, this is not something that I did, okay? And I'm going to have a dad joke about a mother-in-law. And that's always a dangerous thing to talk about. But it was Christmas time, and the son-in-law wanted to give his mother-in-law just the perfect gift. So he decided that he would purchase her a burial plot and give it to his mother-in-law on Christmas morning. Well, needless to say, this gift was not well appreciated at all. Christmas morning, when the mother-in-law received this gift, she didn't say a whole lot about it. So he went about his business, and then before he knew it, Christmas was rolling around again. And so the next year for Christmas, the son-in-law decided that he would not give his mother-in-law anything for Christmas. When the mother-in-law asked why she didn't get her Christmas gift this year, the son-in-law said, "Well, you haven't used the gift I gave you last year." I thought that was kind of funny. Hope that gets your heart ready for the message today, because we're talking about a very important subject. We're talking about the subject of how can we avoid arguments. Now, I don't know about you, but I tend to have somewhat of an argumentative spirit. I'm very opinionated. I have strong beliefs in what I think is right, what I think is wrong. And obviously, I think my opinion's right. And if you're like me, you probably think your opinion is right 99.9% of the time. So today, we want to talk about how in the world can we possibly avoid getting into arguments. Well, let's begin with a verse in Colossians, then we'll go back over the book of James. But Colossians chapter 3, verses 12 and 13 says this: "You are God's chosen race, his saints. He loves you, and you should be clothed in sincere compassion, in kindness and in humility, gentleness and patience. Bear," or we could say forbear, "with one another, forgive each other as soon as a quarrel begins." Now, that's the Living Bible translation. I like the last part of that verse. It says, "Forgive each other as soon as the quarrel begins," because I don't know if you notice this or not, but the longer you go without forgiving somebody, the harder it is to forgive that person. So we are told that we're God's chosen people, and because of that, we are to put on certain things. It's not kind of like putting on a jacket. We're to be clothed with sincere compassion, kindness, humility, gentleness, and patience. Now, as we think about this whole subject of how to avoid an argument with other people, I think if we will put these clothes on, we will avoid a whole lot of problems in our lives. Robert Frost had engraved on his tombstone these words: "I had a lover's quarrel with the world." Now, Frost himself chose that epitaph, which really means is that he had a lover's quarrel with God. And whether we realize it or not, the same is true for all of us. We are at rest or unrest with God, and when we quarrel with other people, most of the problem is with our own selves. We have lost that peace that transcends all understanding, and we must realize that somebody else is responsible for the loss of our peace. Well, not really, but that's what we think. You know, there was a painting in an art museum in Europe many years ago, and it pictures a dark storm-tossed seascape. Now, there's a great roaring of waves crashing on the ragged and rockety shore. Lightning splits the sky in half and tears holes into the night. Now, the title of this painting seems like it's a mismatch, because the title of the painting is the word peace. Now, most people think it's horrifically misnamed, and they walk away scratching their heads. The reason they do that is because they fail to notice in the bottom right corner, nestled in the hollow of one of the rocks on the shore, is a very small bird. It is safe, it is warm, it is secure in the cleft of the rock. You know, our world is in turmoil. It seems that the storms of life are crashing on many of our heads. Yet we can be safe and secure in a peace that transcends all understanding, that is given to us by the Prince of Peace, the rock of our salvation, Jesus Christ himself. Well, we're looking at James chapter 3, the last verse, and going into James chapter 4 today. The last verse of chapter 3 ends with a note of peace. James says this, "And the seed whose fruit is righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace." Now, who are those who make peace? I think it's talking about the church. I think it's talking about believers. I think it's talking about us. Think about who causes you the most conflict. As you look at this verse, you seem to get an insight into what causes this most conflict, and it's me, because I am not planting seeds of peace, so I cannot be a peaceful person. Well, let's talk about why we have arguments in the first place before we talk about how we can avoid having arguments. Well, what causes arguments? Now, James is going to answer this question for us. The cause of arguments is always conflicting desires. Let's go down to chapter number 4, verse number 1. James asks this simple question. What causes fights? What causes quarrels among you? Don't they come from your desire, that battle within you? There it is, right within us. There's a battle that is going on. Now, if you're listening today and you happen to be married, marriage has a built-in condition that creates conflicts. Now, think about it. When you got married, you had these great expectations for your spouse before you got married, and you were very idealistic, you were very unrealistic about how marriage was going to be falling into place in your life. And then you had a very rude awakening. That was the day you woke up. And somebody said this about marriages. All marriages go through three stages. Stage number one is the happy honeymoon stage. That's probably within the first couple of years. You're enjoying marriage. You say, man, this is the greatest thing that could possibly happen to anybody. And then stage two is, well, the party's over. No more honeymoon. And a dose of reality begins to settle in. And then stage number three, when you get to this stage, it's called, let's make a deal, right? Let's see what we can do to stay together. Let's see what we can do to not kill each other. Let's see what we can do to work on this marriage. You know, Proverbs chapter 17 talks about quarreling. And this is a powerful verse. Proverbs 17:9 says, "He who loves to quarrel loves to sin." So if you're by nature a quarrelsome person, you're in essence saying, "I like to sin. I enjoy sinning." Now, as we think about these desires that James talks about, these desires that are within, I think he actually defines these three different desires. The first being that desire to have possessions. James says that you want, but you don't have it. You long for what others have. You see, we want things. We want material things. We want possessions. James says you want what you don't have. You have this longing for something that you don't have. You know, God created things. Things are not the problem. God created all things for us to enjoy. That's why they're there for. God gives us things to enjoy. We are to enjoy things, but love people. Don't get that backwards now. Don't love things and enjoy people. Love people and enjoy things. You know, it's not by accident as you look at what causes marriages to fall apart. George Gallup did a survey and he discovered that 56% of all marriages that end in divorce end because of money issues, that is material possessions. So the first desire that we have is the desire for possessions. The second desire that we have that James points out is this desire to feel. You know, we could call it a desire for pleasure. Look at verse number 3. You want only what will give you pleasure. James says that's what we want. We want to be self-gratified. Now, we're told in 1 Timothy chapter 6, verse number 17, that God made everything for our enjoyment. But when pleasure becomes the number one goal in our lives, it's not good. You know, if you're looking for an escape of conflict, then you got to sometimes delay pleasure. You know, one of the things that you can teach your children, and I really encourage you teaching them sooner rather than later, is this thing called delayed gratification. You know, we want instant gratification, we want instant pleasure. But as you think about that, life is not designed for us to have instant pleasure. You know, I discovered something about life. You know, the more I try to please myself, the less long-term pleasure I actually experience. The more I try to please God, on the other hand, the more long-term pleasure that I have. You know, the same is true in a marriage relationship. The more I try to please myself, the less long-term pleasure I have in my marriage. Instant gratification leads to long-term dissatisfaction. Now, Moses understood this. In Hebrews 11:25, it says this about Moses. Moses decided that he would choose to rather suffer affliction with the people of God than to enjoy the pleasures of sin for only a little while. So here we see that Moses says, you know, it'd be nice for me to give in to the pleasures of sins right now, but I'm looking long term. And I'm looking how I can be set free from bondage with my people if I don't give in to sin. Well, the desire to have, the desire to feel. And then number three, there is this desire to be. We could call this the desire of pride or power. James tells us that it always leads to contention, always leads to arguments. As a matter of fact, he wasn't the only one that had said this. Proverbs 13:10 says, pride leads to arguments. Proverbs 13:10 says, pride leads to arguments, but only by pride comes contention. You know, we're so prideful, aren't we? Maybe you remember doing this when you were a kid, and I have a brother that's 11 months younger than I am. And so in the month of March, we are both the same age for just a couple weeks. He's born March 6th, and I'm born on March 31st. And as you think about this, growing up together with a sibling so close to your age, even though I was 11 months older than him, he's bigger than I am and stronger than I am, especially when we were growing up. And we used to play this game, and he would pin me on the floor and say, I'll let you go if you cry uncle. We'd wrestle, and he'd pin me down, and he'd force me to say uncle. And he'd nearly kill me, but I would never say uncle. Why? My pride would not let me do it. Why don't we just give in? Why don't we just go ahead, okay, uncle, let me go. I don't know if you ever been in an argument when you knew that you were wrong, but you wouldn't admit it. Why is that? Pride is what does that to us. We are so filled with pride. Pride causes arguments. And the bottom line of all these things is that the next time you're in an argument, stop and ask, is this really worth it? Is it worth me losing this relationship because I'm so filled with pride, I can't even admit that I'm wrong? Why aren't our desires fulfilled? Now, James answers this question in James chapter 4, verses 2 and 3. He says, you do not have because you do not ask God. You see, we're looking to get our desires filled in all the wrong places. God wants to fill our desires, but he also says that when we ask, we don't do it the right way. We ask with the wrong motives. So that creates conflict with God himself. Now, we look at this particular passage in chapter 4, verses 4 and 6, and I'm going to look at those two verses together. And when you get home, you have had a chance to look at these two verses. Verse 4 says that God opposes the proud. Verse number 6 says that God gives grace to the humble. So as we put those two together, we discover that if you want to be opposing God, be filled with pride. If you want to lose the opportunity to receive God's grace, be filled with pride, because grace is given to the humble. Well, we've learned so far today that conflicting desires cause arguments, but what is the cure? The cure is nothing more than humility. You see, God will not force us to be humble. You know, humility, that sense of nothingness, which comes when we see how truly God is, and we make a way for him to be God in our lives. In other words, humility is realizing that I am nothing and God is everything. Now, humility is not thinking less of yourself, not downgrading yourself, but it's not thinking of yourself at all. So James says that God gives grace to the humble, and then he says, humble yourselves in the sight of the Lord, and he will lift you up. You see, we don't get along with other people because we've got a civil war going on right within our own lives. That's the real issue. You see, the starting point of getting peace with others is to have peace inside. Finding peace of mind, you'll find that when you have a peace in your heart. Where a conflict inside of you is this battle over who's in charge of my life. You know, if you're in charge, then anytime somebody does something to you that doesn't go the way you want it to go, there's going to be conflict. There's going to be this tightness up within you. You're going to get irritable. You're going to get upset. You want things to go just the way you want them to go, and when they don't go that way, it makes you mad. But if God's in charge of your life, it doesn't irritate you that much. You know, Proverbs 3:15 tells us to let the peace of Christ rule in your lives. So let's talk about this whole mindset of what does humility look like? You know, sometimes when we're studying a word or we're studying a thought, it's easier to understand what it is by identifying what it is not. For example, humility is not humiliation. Sometimes we get humiliated because we've done something stupid. Really, humiliation is self-condemnation. Proverbs 11:2 says that when pride comes, then comes shame, but with the humble is wisdom. Don't you love that? Now, I know that you're very familiar with the story of Moses and how God used Moses to redeem his people and get them out of bondage, how God got them out of Egypt, but it took them 40 years to go from Egypt into the Promised Land. Now, as we look at this, there's a reason behind why this 7 to 10 day journey ends up taking 40 years. God was trying to teach them something. As a matter of fact, Moses gives us what God was trying to teach them. I don't know if you ever pondered, why in the world did it take them so long to get through that wilderness journey? Moses gives us that answer in Deuteronomy chapter 8, verses 2 and 4. Verse number 2, he says, "And you shall remember the whole way that the Lord your God has led you these 40 years in the wilderness, that he might humble you." There it is. God was humbling the nation of Israel. That's why it took them 40 years. God didn't want them to quickly forget that God was teaching them a lesson in humility. But not only humility, Moses goes on and he says, God was also testing you so that you would know what was in your heart. And now God already knew what was in their heart. And by the way, God knows what's in our heart. Our heart is desperately wicked. Who can know it? Well, God can know it. Sometimes we don't know it. And so God will allow us to be delayed. God will allow us to be tested so that we will know what is in our heart, whether we're going to be keeping God's commandments or not. I mean, after all, how easy would it be to keep God's commandments if there's no testing involved in it? It is difficult to keep God's commandments when it costs us something. Verse number 3, Moses continues on and he says that he humbled you that you might let your hunger and he might be able to feed you and give you manna, that which you did not know, nor did your father know, that he might know that man does not live by bread alone. Now, Jesus actually quotes part of this verse that Moses is giving, as Moses says that man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes out of the mouth of the Lord. In John chapter 6, Jesus quotes part of that, and he adds a little bit to it, to the beginning part, and he says to them as they are going through their lives and they're looking for something to eat, he says, man shall not live by bread alone, but then he says, I am the bread of life. He that comes to me will never get hungry at all, and then he exercises his faith, and he'll never get thirsty at all. So humility is not humiliation. Humility is also not disorientation. Sometimes we get confused, and it sets us down, and we're thinking, well, I'm being humble because I don't know what to do. I'm confused. Well, you know, Nebuchadnezzar was disoriented. He was driven away from the people, and he ate grass like a cow. His body was drenched in dew in the heaven, and his hair grew out like feathers, like an eagle, and his nails grew out like claws of a bird. He was not humble, however. He was disoriented. He was confused. We also know that humility is not exhaustion. You have been so exhausted that you lose your fight. It's like, okay, I don't want to fight this anymore. I give up. I'm just tired of fighting this thing. I'm battle weary. I'm exhausted. I'm not going to fight you anymore. Well, that's not humility. That's exhaustion. You know, a man's pride will bring him low, but the humble in spirit will retain honor. Luke 14:11 says, whoever exalts himself will be abased, and he who humbles himself will be exalted. Well, humility is also not being disconnected. Now, sometimes we do this, especially in marriage relationships when things are not going well. We'll say, this is a time for me to disconnect. This is a time for me to separate. This is a time for me to have this disconnect from God's people. I hear sometimes people do this with church. They say, well, pastor, I'm going to lay out for a while. The Lord's teaching me something. I'm really being humbled. I'm going to lay out of church for a while. I'm not going to come to group. I'm not going to come to church. I'm going to lay low for a while. And they're thinking this is an act of humility. That's not an act of humility. That's an act of being disconnected. That's all you're doing. Now, David went through a similar experience. In Psalm 13, he actually explains what's going on. And he says, how long, O Lord, would you forget me forever? In other words, how long will you be disconnected from me? How long will your face be disconnected from me? How long must I wrestle with my thoughts and every day have sorrow in my hearts? How long will my enemy triumph over me? Look on me and answer, O Lord, my God. give light to my eyes, and I will sleep in death. My enemy will say, I have overcome him, and my foes will rejoice when I fall. Really depressing kind of things here as David chronicles what is he experiencing, what is he feeling. He's feeling forgotten by God. He's feeling disconnected from God. But then there's a shift. Verse number 5, Psalm 13, David says, but I'm going to trust in your unfailing love. Even though David felt disconnected, God never disconnected from David. And David said, my heart rejoices in your salvation, and I will sing to the Lord, for he has been good to me. You see, David didn't humbly seek the Lord when he realized he was disconnected. He was humbled when he remembered God's unfailing love. That's what humbles us. Psalm 115, verse number 1 says, not unto us, O Lord, not unto us, but to your name give glory. Now, I have some promises that are given to those who are humble. And by the way, being humble is something that cannot be forced upon you. When I was growing up, I was a strong-willed child, and I would often weigh the cost of doing something wrong, knowing that it was wrong, knowing that it would cost me something, and I would sit down and I'd say, you know what, this one's worth it. It may be a situation where I know that my parents were going to apply to Board of Education or my seat of learning if I did what I wanted to do, but I would do it anyway. I refused to be humbled. Even though I was chastised, I didn't humble myself. You know, humility is something that is an act of the will. In 2 Chronicles 7:14, I know you know this verse. It's a powerful promise. If my people who are called by my name, there it is, will humble themselves and pray and seek my face and turn from their wicked ways, then will I hear from heaven and forgive their sins and I'll heal their land. Now look at the process here. It doesn't start with praying. It doesn't start with seeking God's face. It doesn't even start with turning from your wicked ways. God hears us first and foremost when we humble ourselves. That is a self-abasement, lowering myself, and then I can pray. You know, some people pray with a heart of non-humility. I think about the story of the Pharisees and the scribes and how the Pharisees would look down on others and they would brag about how they prayed and how they fasted. Now, they weren't humble. They were filled with themselves. You know, something else about humility, there's some promises that are given, and that is that we get more grace as we are humble. God resists the proud, but he gives grace to the humble. Peter talked about the promise that is given to those who are humble, and he also emphasized that God resists the proud, but it gives grace to the humble, 1 Peter 5:6. Therefore, humble yourselves under the mighty hand of God, that he may exalt you in due time. Cast all your care upon him, because he cares for you. Well, let's define pride versus humility. Pride is a self-centered preoccupation with and an overestimation of one's own importance, one's own abilities or achievements, resulting in an unwillingness to submit to God and an insensitivity to others. Now, this is a lot, but let's unpack this, okay? Self-centered preoccupation. So a humble person is not preoccupied with himself. He doesn't think about himself often. He's not preoccupied with his own little world. He's concerned about the affairs and needs of others. He doesn't overestimate his own importance. You know, so many people think, well, you know, this church was nothing until I came along, or this job was nothing until I came along. So many people have an overestimation of their own importance. You know what? Your job probably did okay before you got there. Your church probably did okay before you got there too. So don't overestimate your importance, your abilities, or your achievements. Don't oversell yourself, because when you do that, it's resulting in an unwillingness to submit to God, and you become very insensitive to others. Well, humility, on the other hand, is this freedom from a sense of one's own importance. In other words, I'm not hung up on that. I'm not sitting around and counting the number of people who like my post. I'm not sitting around with this opportunity of just looking for people to bless me. It is freedom from my own self-importance, with total dependence on God and honest concern with each other. Well, we're going to stop and we're going to diffuse conflict. We've got to give it over to God. We've got to get wise to what Satan is doing. Number 3, we've got to grow closer to God. And number 4, we've got to be willing to ask for forgiveness. I think that is the difficult part right there, being willing to ask for forgiveness. Verse 8, James says, wash your hands, purify your hearts. And so this broadcast, as we wind our time down together today, I want to encourage you to spend some time growing closer to God. You know, James reminds us that as we draw near to God, he would draw near to us. That is a promise that is given to believers, not non-believers, because non-believers are not going to draw near to God unless the Spirit of God pulls them into that relationship. I want you to be willing to seek God's forgiveness. Would you spend just a moment saying, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. Help me to walk in humility. Help me to eradicate pride in my life. Help me to consider others even more than myself. Thanks for listening. God bless you.
Hickory Ridge Community Church is located at 3220 South Battlefield Boulevard, Chesapeake, Virginia. Sunday service times are at 9 a.m. and 11 a.m. We would love for you to join us. For more information, you go to our website at www.hrcc7.org. No matter what you're going through, remember, in Jesus Christ, there is always hope for your heart.